Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi. Hello. Hi. Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
That's nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the VeloCast. The Cima copy at this year's Giro, the Passo di Stelvio, was in doubt almost right until the last moment, given the weather that batters the mountain at this time of year. With its inclusion confirmed, what was then in doubt was whether long-term Maglia Rossa wearer João Almeida would be able to hold on to the jersey beyond the Stelvio's 25-kilometre-long ascent. And indeed, sadly, it was one mountain too far for the deconic Quickstep rider, who succumbed to the inferno pace set by Team Sunweb. Unfortunately for Team Sunweb, it also proved too much for Wilco Kelderman, as he had to watch teammate Jai Hindley attach himself to the recently emergent GC-threatening figure of Tao Geoghegan-Hart as the duo disappeared up the climb. Still, while Kelderman did lose time by day's end, he did stem his losses to the duo up front and moved into pink, while teammate Hindley took the stage and second place on GC.
It was a magnificent day in the mountains, wasn't it? I mean, we had everything. The King of the Mountains guy going away in the breakaway to get points. A big breakaway which had some strong, strong riders in it, including the ubiquitous Thomas de Gent, but also Filippo Ganna, Stefano Rosetto, Fabio Fellini, Dario Cataldo. All of those guys are perfectly capable of forcing a really big break in a big mountain day and staying away until the death. We also saw through that the GC guys were serious. It was never allowed the kind of distance where it was even vaguely credible with the monster that was the Stelvio to come. So after that, we had a GC battle par excellence. Some magnificent individual performances, some superb teamwork, scenery that was just breaking my heart watching it. A noble, noble, failure is the wrong word, but a noble capitulation from João Almeida. It was everything I love about this sport, just drama writ large up on the roads of Italy. I was glued to it all day, and I've got to say, mate, I really hope you watched the Vuelta, because I completely forgot about it until the finishing climb in the Giro. Didn't even remember it was on.
It's just as well for us, and I think, you know, if there are indeed cycling gods, then they possibly had a little word with the peloton at the Vuelta today and just went, guys, calm down. There's some other stuff happening elsewhere. We don't need you for the minute. Let's everyone focus on what's happening in Italy.
I'm not joking. I genuinely forgot. I got to about 3:30 and went, oh, bugger, the Vuelta's on.
I kept half an eye on it, but as I say, thankfully the peloton were behaving themselves over in Spain while everything was kicking off in Italy. So it made life a tad easier for us. One thing that, when coverage started, that confused me greatly was why Giovanni Visconti wasn't in the break. And I was very angry with him up until I realised that he actually was a DNS today.
Yeah.
Thus leaving the quite literally mountainous path clear for Ruben Guerra to, we expect, take the jersey all the way to Milan now. But the other rider that was absolutely pivotal and key to what happened and the whole stage up in that break, and it's not often that this is a tactic that works, was Rohan Dennis, who was the perfect breakaway companion and then a bridge for Tao Geoghegan-Hart, upon which he could rest his entire Giro d'Italia, it would seem.
Yeah, and we've got so used to, in recent months, recent years, recent decades, expand back as far as you like, to saying people need to take action at this point. They need to go from far out. They can't wait until the final climb. If they want to make a difference, they have to attack early. And for once, all of that was played out. You know, we'd seen strong, strong guys in the breakaway. I mean, it actually grew from that initial break I was talking, and we had the likes of, you know, Ben Swift and Carretero, who've been up there already, William Inches. So the break was strong, but really it was just the amuse-bouche, the warm-up for the GC fight. And by the time we got to the break being caught in the Stelvio, although exactly according to type, Ben O'Connor decided to disappear up the road and have a wee mini break on his own, it was down to the GC guys, and very, very, very quickly, the pack went down. We saw people being shed out the front, or out the back rather, as the pace was pushed in the front. And Sunweb clearly had a plan. They'd been working hard all day to get to the foot of that climb, with their kind of general ruler guys being burnt. And it was down to Jai Hindley and Wilco Kelderman. And they worked hard. And we saw people like Jakob Fuglsang being shed. We saw Vincenzo Nibali being shed. And then suddenly we're down to a very select group of four people.
Yeah, Pots of Evil actually being the first of the GC group to look in difficulty, with still 10k left to go to the top of the climb. That's when the first signs that the Magliarosa himself was in trouble. I thought he rallied particularly well, as we've seen him do, in fairness, over the past week or so. Whenever he's in difficulty, he really just focuses on what he needs to do and doesn't panic, which is so admirable. And a rider, as we've talked about right the way through this race, in his first Grand Tour, in this position that he's never found himself in before, kind of surprised at where Fausto Masnada was for the initial part of the pink jersey losing contact with the lead group. It seemed to take an age for him to come back, and he didn't look best pleased at having to do so. I can't think that somebody as experienced as Fausto Masnada was getting grumpy over losing his top 10 place to come back and help the Magliarosa, though, surely.
I had a sneaking suspicion that actually Almeida had told them, "I'm okay, I can manage on my own." I was going to actually award him to an entire wee chapter in his own for today's show, because I've got to say, João Almeida, when he crossed the line with that distinctive kind of head slightly poked forward on his torso out the saddle style, just up that final wee rise, I stood up and applauded. Now, it's just me and the dog, I mean, it's not a great gesture, but I stood up from my chair and applauded him across the line, because what we saw in the Stelvio from Almeida was essentially what he's done all week in microcosm when he's been in trouble. He's ridden as hard as he possibly can, but no harder. He's tried to stick on, and when he can't, as we saw the other day, all he does is settles down and rides his own race. And for much of that, he was left on his own. He was back in a group with other people who were also losing time in the GC, and he was left on his tod to work. They were bringing people back. Still, Almeida was in the front, and he didn't complain. He just got on with it. Masnada came back and helped him. Great. He didn't complain. He just got on with it. My rider of this entire race, even if he doesn't, manage to step back up in the time trial on Sunday, is João Almeida. He's ridden that jersey with great, great dignity, great respect, and he's been a credit to himself and the race. And Deceuninck and Quickstep have gone up almost immeasurably, in my opinion, actually, as a GC support team. They've ridden magnificently in his support. And Masnada, who's been so attentive, we talked about him the other day, I think was essentially either not listening on the radio, or more likely was told, "I've got this, go on. I'm not going to be in touch. If you can hang on, hang on." But when he did come back, he did his job for as long as he could. He absolutely fantastic from Almeida. I can't speak highly enough of him. Up front, though, everybody's been shed and we're down to four people. And Rohan Dennis, what a ride. I think that's the best ride I've seen him make in his entire career. And I'm going to say the same today as I said when Filippo Ganna won his stage. You cannot be surprised in a climb like today, which had no extravagant inclines. The one where Almeida was kind of put in trouble when they were still in the trees was when it kicked up a couple of percent. But on a climb like that, which is relatively steady, relatively constant, a good time trialist who is quite lean and quite light, because watts per kilogram, as I was chatting to a handmade cyclist actually on Twitter about, is still important. But that climb today was all about sitting at your threshold, pushing your limits to the very, very edge, but no further. And that's what a time trialist does. But dear God, he was good. He just sat there. We've seen Jai Hindley perform superbly. And Rohan Dennis was the mountain domestique par excellence today. Another man of the day for me alongside Almeida.
Yeah, definitely. And that punishing pace and riding at threshold that you've just talked about was enough, as you say, to just ship everybody. It came down to four, and then it came down to three, because kind of like we were talking about before, there was just a little hint in the previous days that Wilco Kelderman was fragile, that actually Jai Hindley was the better climber. That was demonstrated in spades today, as the pace that was being set by Rohan Dennis took it from a quartet to a trio, with Jai Hindley, as I say, limpet-like on Tia Gegenhardt's wheel, while the erstwhile team leader, and still really is the team leader until such times
until Saturday, let's be blunt,
dictate otherwise, is Wilco Kelderman. Now, there was a huge discussion, I'm sure this played out on Twitter as well, but certainly in commentary, there was a lot of discussion of, wait a minute, why should the domestique be sitting on Theo Gegenhardt's wheel when his team leader is clearly suffering out the back?
It's a very interesting discussion, and there's a discussion to be had about whether Wilco Kelderman would have lost as much time if Jai Hindley had held back. But the problem was that Jai Hindley wasn't the domestique who was 3 or 4 minutes back. You know, he'd done his work earlier in the race and subsequently was in a position where he might be allowed to go for a stage win, or he could throw away his own chances without consideration of what, you know, the leader's going to do. Sunweb, I would not have liked to have been in that car today, because you've got Wilco Kelderman, who's done really well, arguably the best he's ever done in a Grand Tour, and he's starting to falter. So your first thought is, right, let's get Hindley back, he can pace him at the finish. But Kelderman started to drop back quite early on the Stelvio. One of the images of the day, which they kept repeating as various groups went through, is there was a shot up to the side of the mountain where you just saw the hairpins that were still to go. And it was terrifying, and Kelderman was off the back before that. Now, Hindley is within a second of Theo Gegenhardt, who's got Rohan Dennis leading him up the front. He's really in touch with the GC overall. So he is not a disposable asset to be burnt for Kelderman. He's someone who, if Kelderman continues to falter, can step up and take his place as a contender at the front of the race. So they had two guys, one of whom's nominally the leader, but neither of whom you can just throw their chances away. It was a hellish day between a rock and a hard place for the Sunweb DSs today.
I felt it was actually a fairly easy decision to make. I can understand why you were saying there would have been consternation in the moment, but looking at it from a safe distance, armchair DS that we all are, etc., etc., it seemed to be perfectly logical what Sunweb had to do. It was leave Wilco Kelderman to ride his own race, because, as you say, Jai Hindley's 1 second up on Theo Gegenhardt, who has suddenly emerged as the new threat to GC. So if he's 1 second up on that new emergent threat, he has to stay there with him. And we also have to look at the bigger picture, not only just of today, but also there is more climbing to come, where Wilco Kelderman may or may not falter again. But there's also the time trial to come on the final day, where Wilco Kelderman is the strongest card.
Yeah.
So he still and plus he has time in the bag already in GC. He was the virtual Magliarosa at that point. So to me, it was a very obvious decision to make. You just stick with this new threat. The guy behind has time. He has time trialing abilities beyond and above those who are riding out in front of him. All of these cards are lining up to say, Jai, stick with Theo.
You see, the flip side to that is you pull Jai Hindley back, he saves Wilco Kelderman, let's be conservative, 30 seconds, say, by pacing him up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, Kelderman's got a much bigger buffer. So, yeah, I mean, there is a genuine... I would have made the same decision as you. You know, I'm not arguing with you. I thought they did exactly the right thing and rode it perfectly. But if you'd been fully committed to a leader, as we've seen other teams do in the past, we've seen teams throw away the chances of domestiques in support of a faltering leader, then pulling back Jai Hindley to embiggen, you know, to make larger the buffer that Kelderman has going into the final weekend, would also make sense. The problem is Hindley is visibly the stronger of the two at this point. So there's no thought of actually throwing him away when you come down to it. I can see both sides, but I would do exactly the same as you. I'm not arguing.
And then we had Jerseygate
A jacket gate,
of course, yeah. As they're approaching the top of the climb, and many, many riders, if not all, did this a good bit earlier than Sunweb attempted to do. Indeed, Rohan Dennis and Theo Gegenhardt at Ineos were jacketed up and looking very secure for the descent, which of course is going to be bitterly, bitterly cold. Same distance down as it has been up, so the full 25 kilometres with snow all around you, and the wind chill must have been horrendous. But Sunweb seemed to do this very, very late and had a great deal of difficulty, both Wilco Kelderman and, more noticeably, certainly in trying to get the damn thing on, was Jai Hindley, who almost ended up into the wall by the side of the road.
I tell you, you know Julian Alaphilippe, he threw away Liège-Bastogne-Liège by celebrating too early. He nearly did the same later. Now, both of those are touted as embarrassing. I think riding into a wall in the Stelvio because you don't know how to put on a rain jacket would rank up there. I genuinely thought Hindley was going to fall over. Whether he ran into the wall or toppled over, it was never going to end well. You said on WhatsApp actually at the time, I think, you know, we could make a fortune if we could design a jacket that you could put on really, really easily for racing cyclists. You know, get on it, mate. That's your next job for Velocast clothing.
Well, Jai Hindley and Wilco Kelderman are our first two customers, clearly.
I tell you though, what was even worse is he went to all of that trouble, looked like a baby giraffe trying to walk, actually, is the only thing I can bring to mind in terms of his coordination and dignity as he was trying to pull that jacket on. Then couldn't zip it up. So essentially just put a massive sail on his back and was just as cold as he was going to be on the descent.
His arms were slightly warmer. That's about the only thing you could say. So frustrated was Wilco Kelderman behind with his jacket adventures that he rather foolishly, I think, in everybody's book, decided to take the damn thing off altogether. Yep. And in a fit of pique, another of which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a moment, decided to throw it away. Now, given what then happened on the valley roads to the next climb, that Wilco Kelderman shipped a significant amount more than he had been able to just hold on the descent. I think it was about 30 or 40 seconds by that point. It went out to a minute and a half.
And he looked cooked.
And his body was rocking all over the place. And we've all been there if we've ridden any length of time. If you get cold, suddenly your system just shuts down and the legs just don't work anymore. The brain stops working, in fact. And that's what Wilco Kelderman looked like. Even though the thing was flapping about like, goodness knows what, a big loose sail, it would have been better, I would have thought, to at least keep it on so that his arms were getting some benefit from it. And at some point, once the descent eased off a bit, zip it up to get the heat back into himself, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think what we saw today, and people are going to laugh at this, was, you know, we've had all of the Dr. Freeman stuff and the chaos in the back room for, you know, British Cycling and Team Sky and Ineos. But today was actually a perfect example of that much maligned phrase, marginal gains. Because we saw, you know, the rain jacket mess that Sunweb got into. That cost energy, whether it's for Hindley or whether it's for Kelderman. That was not a smooth transition to different clothing layers so they were dressed appropriately for the conditions. That was a mess. And then we got onto the valley floor and they were, I nearly swore there, farting about with the team cars trying to get feeds. You know, there was just all sorts of nonsense going on with Sunweb.
Well,
today,
it was Jai Hindley had called for the car. Yeah. It then had to pass Wilco on the way up to the front of the race.
Yep.
It slowed down, handed up a bottle to Wilco Kelderman, and they drove off with Wilco. I mean, it was almost comical, turning to get the second bottle or gels or whatever that he wanted.
The car's gone.
The car's already half, you know, half a mile up the road. He was not happy about at all. And I think that when the time started to really stretch out, it was there. Because I think his head went at that point.
And do you know the marginal gain? Ineos had helpers with bottles by the roadside, ready, waiting. No farting about, everything they needed there already. car doesn't have to be there. It's a confused race with riders all over the place. Doesn't matter. The car doesn't have to get up to them. They've got helpers by the roadside. And that is, for all that we mock it, that's the kind of attention to detail that makes a difference. You know, you have the sunweb chaos versus, there you go, there's your bottle. Need anything else? Nope, that's fine. You're going. And actually, that final climb also brought out a lot of what I love about cycling. It's easy to wax lyrical about the Stelvio. We just have. You know, it's corny phrase. It's literally a theatre of dreams. You know, it is one of the iconic climbs in cycling. There's so much history. You know, and it's a worthy holder of the Cima Coppi. You know, legendary rider. It lives up to his reputation in every single way it can. But that final climb, first time it's been used in the Giro, although we saw Annemiek van Vleuten absolutely slay the women's peloton there, but this is the first time the men's peloton have used it. And what we saw were two things. We saw the persistence from Wilco Kelderman that marks the very best performances in our sport. He'd been cold in the valley, he warmed up on the climb, he got going, and he held it. You know, faded a wee bit towards the end, but he could have lost 3 or 4 minutes today if he'd sat up. And he didn't, he just persisted, he kept on. And up front, when Rohan Dennis finally peeled off after that magnificent job very early in the climb, we're left with two guys, Jai Hindley, who's, you know, putative team leader if Wilco Kelderman falters, who nonetheless stuck to his job as domestique without complaint. Didn't try to ride against his leader, just did his job. Now, that's in his interest as well, because he seems like a good guy, and potentially he's getting the jersey anyway, so all's good. And Theo Gegenhardt, there was a discussion near the start of the climb. They rode alongside each other, had a wee chat. He just accepted the tactics as they were. You know, the real-world situation that he was put in by having Kelderman behind, put his head down and rode. No tantrums, no gurning, no moaning. He knew that Jai Hindley had a job to do, and he just got on with his job. So we had honour and persistence. Fantastic.
And the plaudits continue, because I think another rider that we have to heap praise on is Pello Bilbao, who had been significantly dropped. I think it's fair to categorise it as, over the Stelvio. But what a storming ride to come back. I mean, if eventually coming in third place on the stage, only 46 seconds back on the two winners, essentially, of the day, Jai Hindley and Theo Gegenhardt. I thought he had a fantastic day today.
Yeah, him and Jakob Fuglsang both, actually. I thought one of the defining moments of the Giro today would be when they passed Wilco Kelderman. Because I thought at that point Kelderman's head would just drop and he'd lose time hand over fist, but he didn't. He kept working. Fuglsang, being left without domestiques, being left exposed, had bad days, had punctures. He's been through everything this race can offer. He did a good ride today and looked absolutely puggled at the end, actually. He turned himself out, inside out. But Pello Bilbao, briefly, I thought was going to catch up with that front duo. He was just grabbing time by, you know, by the bucketful. So he's a guy as well today. He stepped up as a GC contender. Fantastic, fantastic ride from him today. And I'm sorry if I'm going overboard in the superlatives today. It's one of the best days cycling I've seen for a very long time.
No, it was great. It was absolutely great. Now, a few questions I think we've got to all, and I'm sure we all have been posing since the stage ended, and we've seen João Almeida come in 4 minutes 51 down. We talked yesterday about how it was likely he was going to lose the jersey today, but potentially gain it back when it comes the time trial.
Yeah, that's
where I was going to say, well, you've beat me to actually posing the question. The time gap is far too significant now, and unless he rallies on Saturday at Sestriere.
His mum and dad were in the Stelvio.
Don't tell me that. I'm going to be bubbling here. Don't.
I did. I teared up when I heard that. It wouldn't surprise me to see him have a dig on Saturday, but it really is a much truncated stage to what we were expecting. Arguably, Saturday was going to be the Queen stage. But today was definitely that in this race. So I don't think there's much opportunity. But I felt really angry when I read some of the reports for today's stage, because I wanted to get a feel on what everybody else had seen. And the word collapse was used for João Almeida.
Oh, please.
What a load of bollocks. He rode his skin out and did the jersey proud. There were people who were better than him on the day, but he didn't collapse. He was just beaten. That was a magnificent performance. I think the pink's out of reach for him. And I feel actually feel even worse for him than I felt for Cadel Evans early in his career, you know, when he lost Pink. Because he actually did collapse, you know, whereas Almeida didn't. There were just people better than him on the day. I think he's stepped out from the shades as a domestique now. He's no longer just a domestique. He is someone who is young, who can develop. He's had the jersey for 15 days, done it proud. He's going to step up. This will give him confidence. He's shown that he's not fragile mentally. He can fight. He really knows how to dig in. We're going to see more of Almeida, whether it's in a Grand Tour as a contender or whether it's in week-long stage races. Portugal's got a new star. Fantastic.
And to those that are now left within touching distance, I mean, the podium itself is immensely tight. Immensely tight. I talked earlier about the advantage that Wilco Kelderman still has in terms of time trialling. He's, I think, fair again to say that he's favourite out of that trio that sits atop the GC at the minute when it comes to the time trial. Are we also saying that Saturday stage, given it has been curtailed and isn't going to France, there aren't the opportunities available for Theo Gegenhardt, especially, to upset the GC yet further and put enough time into Wilco Kelderman in order that he would have that buffer that he would require ahead of the time trial?
I think the chances are much reduced. I mean, if we're completely honest, I would love to talk it up, but the chances are much reduced for the difficulty that Kelderman can be put into. But he does look vulnerable. You know, he fought hard today, but he does look vulnerable. And when you're tired, some of that advantage that he has in a time trial, because he's the best time trialist of the three, there's no question about that in my mind. But some of that advantage that you have, you might not be able to press that home quite as well. So, you know, what is it, 13 seconds or something? I mean, it's all
15 seconds to Theo Gegenhardt, 12 to his teammate Jai Hindley.
Unbelievably tight. I mean, just unbelievably tight. So, everything's to play for. Sestriere, although we're talking down Saturday, that is not an easy climb. People can be put into difficulty there. And, yeah, there's opportunities. There's definitely opportunities to take it to Sunweb. I don't think he's going to falter enough to be put at threat for the final GC. But, you know, with 15 seconds between the top three, who the hell knows? I mean, anything can happen. I bet you they're glad it's a sprint day tomorrow, though, and they can have a bit of a rest.
We shall come to that. But results of the 18th stage of this year's Giro. Jai Hindley takes the win ahead of Theo Gegenhardt. In third place was Pello Bilbao. In fourth, Jakob Fuglsang. In fifth place, Wilco Kelderman. In sixth, Patrick Conrad. In seventh, João Almeida. In eighth place, Vincenzo Nibali. Hermann Preinsteiner came in ninth. And Fausto Masnada is in tenth. So changes to the general classification, the long reign of João Almeida comes to an end and Wilco Kelderman steps into the Maglia Rosa 12 seconds ahead of teammate Jai Hindley. In third place is Theo Gegenhardt at 15 seconds. Pello Bilbao sits in fourth at 1 minute and 19. The aforementioned João Almeida slips down to fifth at 2 minutes and 16 seconds. Jakob Fuglsang is in sixth at 3:59. Patrick Conrad sits in 7th at 5 minutes and 40. Vincenzo Nibali in 8th at 5:47. Fausto Masnada is in 9th at 6:46. And Hermann Preinsteiner is in 10th at 7 minutes and 23. So indeed, the GC guys will be thankful for Stage 19's arrival tomorrow. Not a single classified climb intrudes on the 251 kilometres from Morbegno to Asti, which of course means it's time to let the sprinters out of the Gruppetto hurt locker they've been shut inside for the past week or so.
Sam Bennett then.
I know, that's the wrong race, John.
I knew I was going to do that.
I mean, you were so close to managing to keep all the Giro stuff to the Giro, but some Vuelta riders managed to sneak into your subconscious there.
It's easy for me to do today, mate. I forgot about the Vuelta. Arnaud Démare, obvious choice. I've got a wee feeling that Elia Viviani is going to turn up for Italy tomorrow, though. But other than that, it's any sprinter that's left in with a dig, because there's going to be some absolutely knackered legs tomorrow. You know, that was an evil, evil day, and it can take the zip out of anybody's fast twitch fibres, however good they are. So it's just the, you know, any of the usual suspects, but Damar's got to be the favourite, hasn't he?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, unless, as you say, all the climbing. I mean, what have we done over the past few days?
9,000 metres or something the last
something
2 days.
Something crazy like that, yeah. And it's a long day tomorrow, even though there's... As I said, not a single classified climb along the way. It's 251 kilometres. So it's still a fair old chunk of change to be riding through. Yeah. And I'm sure a break will go and the peloton will control it, ensuring that bunch sprint at the end. But I wouldn't like to have ridden all of that today and then have to do 250k tomorrow.
Aye, Everest and pa. Try doing that over 2 days at the Giro. I think the sprinters teams have had so few chances that if they can control it, they will. We're going to see a sprint tomorrow. I'm almost certain of it. Unless Thomas de Gent decides to do, well, the usual Thomas de Gentery.
And if he's not joined by Ben O'Connor, I'll be absolutely stunned. I mean, beyond showing some red letters over unpaid bills and some starving children, I don't know what else that poor man can do to get a contract for next year. Someone please sign him.
He was magnificent again today, wasn't he? I mean, what a guy that is. I'm going to pick Viviani for tomorrow, but it's mostly for sentimental reasons than anything else.
Okie doke. Across now to northern Spain, where things were a tad more conservative for stage three, leaving it until almost the last moment on the steep final climb to Laguna Negra. Dan Martin beat race leader Primoz Roglic and an elite bunch to the line and moved himself into second place and within 5 seconds of the Mayo Rojo.
Meh. We had a break, you know. Willie Smith, who's one of my favourite people, he's great on social media. He first came to our notice in that wonderful break in the World Champs a few years ago. Aritz Bagues, Mark Donovan, Nicky Terpstra, Tosh van der Sand. They got 4 minutes. They were caught too early. You know, with, what was it, 70k or 60k to go, they were caught. And then we had another wee break, and then we had a wee bit of excitement where it looked like Movistar were going to force echelons, but the wind dropped. And then, actually, so it all happened until the GC guys started to ramp it up in the final climb. My heart goes out to Esteban Chavez.
Mm.
Mechanical with, what, 5, 6k to go. And essentially they put him on, well, a bike that looked the size that would fit Ben O'Connor. I mean, he looked like he was going to hit his nads on the down tube at the bottom of the top tube rather, at the bottom of the pedal stroke. Fortunately, seemed to get a change back to his own bike reasonably quickly, which helped him limit his losses to 106 on the day. But up front, it was the usual suspects. You know, Seb Kuss, Dan Martin, Primoz Roglic. We had a bit of a dig from Clément Champoussin, but ultimately it came down to who we expected. And I would love to draw this out and wax lyrical about it, but it was a sprint at the end of what looked like a fairly innocuous climb after a day where nothing happened. And I'm really glad we're not just covering the world on its own today, or it would be a really bloody short podcast.
We do have...
pad it out. Give it your best shot, mate.
Well, my best shot is in... just the sheer emotion writ large on Dan's face.
We could see it because he doesn't bother wearing a bloody mask.
But there was tears. There was actual tears there. And, you know, we love it when riders start crying. It's very modern. You know, modern men should cry and it should be encouraged. So I was pleased to see Dan crying for all the right reasons today. He's looking in cracking form, in fairness.
Yeah, he's certainly in touch with his feminine side. It was, actually, women are harder than us. They cry a lot less than us. Certainly a lot less than you and me. I did like the fact, though, genuinely, that in his post-race interview in the press tent, he doesn't have a mask on, but he's still got his helmet on. I mean, jeez.
Have you seen Dan's helmet here? It's not a pleasant sight. I mean, he was doing us all a favour, really.
It was brilliant to see him win, and the emotion actually spoke volumes. We talked at the start of the Vuelta you know, which seems a week ago now, but it's only, you know, a few days, how he was coming back. He was in great form after the injury that he suffered during the tour, which compromised his chances there when he was in such good form. He has a real kick when he's on form. You know, he's not just a good climber. He has a kick at the end of a hard stage. That climb today, although I'm making little of it, wasn't easy. You know, it really put the GC guys in a relatively select group up the front. There was, what, Poels did a good ride to hold it to 4 seconds at the finish, but there were only three guys in that wee tiny front group of Dan Martin, Primoz Roglic and Richard Carapaz. We've talked about Roglic and Carapaz being in form and looking good. Dan Martin showed today that he's the equal of them, certainly in this kind of terrain. So it was a great ride from Dan, although I'm, you know, mocking him for not wearing a mask and, you know, belittling the stage in general. I'm only belittling it because we had such an epic day's racing at the Giro. Great ride from Dan, puts him in good form. More importantly, as we saw from that emotion, bumps up his confidence. He's now confident in his abilities. He's ready to race. It's been a long time since a victory. That chip's off his shoulder. He can just get on with racing now. So, yeah, he's going to do well going forward. It was a good ride from Dan Martin. But the other GC guys who've been very, very prominent up to now were still prominent. You know, Ulrich Mass and Felix Grosschartner were probably the worst of them, along with Hugh Carthy, and they were, you know, a massive 9 and 12 seconds back. So there was hee-ho in it, really.
A special mention must go to Sean Kelly for his spoonerism of the day.
Two spoonerisms of the day. Grinio Senadiers,
which is fantastic.
But my favourite one was Sex Tregafredo. Which sounds like some kind of sexy kind of dessert you'd get at a posh Italian restaurant, doesn't it?
Well, I was thinking I'd love to try Sex Tregafredo or whatever. It sounds like something to do with some kind of harness and chocolate. It sounds great, whatever it is. we should all be encouraged to do so. It results for the third stage of the Vuelta. Dan Martin takes the win ahead of Primoz Roglic. In third place, Richard Carapaz. Wout Poels in fourth, Alexander Vlasov in fifth, Ulrich Mass in sixth, Felix Grosschartner in seventh, Hugh Carthy in eighth, Sepp Kuss in ninth, and Clément Champoussin in 10th. So Primoz Roglic remains in red, but now 5 seconds ahead of Dan Martin in second place and 13 seconds ahead of Richard Carapaz in third. Ulrich Mass sits in fourth at 32 seconds. Hugh Carthy is in fifth at 38 seconds. Sepp Kuss in sixth at 44 seconds. Felix Grosschartner is in seventh at 1 minute and 17. Esteban Chavez is in eighth at 1:29. Marc Soler in ninth at 1:55. And rounding out the GC top 10 is George Bennett at 1:57. Now, the Vuelta joins the Giro in calming things down somewhat for Stage 4. Whilst not quite as flat as its counterpart across the Balearic and Tyrrhenian seas, the 191 kilometres from Garay to Elia de los Calabros will, we imagine, also end in a bunch sprint.
In this case, I'm not joking, genuinely Sam Bennett. Did you see him relaxed in the bunch chatting away with Pascal Ackermann today?
I think will be the person who will be challenging for the stage win against Sam Bennett tomorrow.
Yeah, the two of them have got it. You know, we might see somebody break away with, you know, a few hundred metres and hold off the peloton. But for me, it's nailed on between Sam Bennett and Pascal Ackermann. And I think Sam would round off the year nicely, getting a victory in another Grand Tour. And he looks relaxed and he looks confident. So that's enough for me. I'm going for Sam Bennett.
And on that note, thank you all for joining us today as the GC turned on its head at the Giro d'Italia and Dan Martin took an emotional win in Spain. Join us again tomorrow as we discuss matters much more horizontal in the next edition of the VeloCast. The VeloCast, the soundtrack to cycling. Subscribe at velocast.cc where currently you can also take advantage of our 2021 early bird offer.